What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about my favorite rep and set schemes and intensity techniques for muscle growth. Things like drop sets and supersets and myo reps and cluster sets and reverse drop sets and partial reps or whatever. We're going to talk about what they are, when you might use them, how you might use them, you know, other pieces of context that I think are important if you want to incorporate them or just have a better understanding of them when you see them within your programming. Before we do that, I have to do something that makes me uncomfortable, frankly, because I've recorded this maybe like 8 times already, and that's ask for a podcast review. We're about 4 years into this podcast. I'm super proud. It's been such a fun practice for me. A really good passion project. Started, 4 years ago, and we've averaged about an episode a week, and I'm very proud, and I enjoy it a ton. And I've just never done that before, and I would really like it if you get value from the podcast, if you enjoy it, if you listen, every week and you enjoy the guests and the solo episodes and the Q&As, it would mean a ton to me. If you went and left a review, if you're listening on iTunes, you can leave a review. If you're on Spotify, you can kind of just rate the podcast. It's super duper helpful. It means a ton. It's how the podcast grows. It's how we can get, better guests and, we can get this information out to more people. And as you can tell, I hate doing this sort of stuff. I'm never going to have ads in the podcast. I'm never going to pause the podcast to try and sell you something, but I do need to put a little work into asking for reviews, and that would mean a lot to me. And so I'll stop sweating now and we'll get into the good information. So before we jump into, straight sets, supersets, all of this stuff, I want to say that a lot of these rep and set schemes and intensity techniques, they're going to sound really cool. They're going to sound fancy. Some of them may sound complicated. And I think there are benefits, right? I think there are going to be, we're going to talk about, when and why you might do something and what the upside of doing XYZ intensity technique might be. But I'll level with you guys. 90% of the benefit, in my opinion, of all of this stuff is variation, fun, intellectual stimulation, essentially changing it up and keeping things interesting. Incorporating these is more likely to make your training more fun over time than give you this like ton of extra benefit. Oh my God, I started doing myo reps and my arms blew up. It's like, no, that's just not how this works. There aren't game-breaking set and intensity techniques. There just aren't. Doing a lot of really hard sets over time is how you get jacked, not because, person A did myo reps and person B didn't. I don't want to poo-poo the benefits. And frankly, I actually want to even highlight the fact that whether it's saving time or making your training more fun and varied over time, those are massive, massive benefits. Because what I just said is the goal to, if you want to get jacked, what you need to do is you need to do a lot of hard sets over many, many years. And the many, many years part means you need to be enjoying your training. You need to be stimulated by it enough that you keep doing it. And having intensity techniques, changing up rep and set schemes, enough variation to keep you interested is incredibly important because doing the training for many, many years is the key factor for ultimately building a lot of muscle. And so although I'm like, hey, these things aren't game-breaking in terms of your results, they might be, over the long term, something that keeps you motivated, keeps you excited, keeps you stimulated to go to the gym. And because there's, we'll talk about the fact there's probably no real downside to doing some of these things, or if you do them correctly, not much of a downside, then we can look at things like fun or saving time as a real feature to some of this stuff. But I think there are going to be people out there that are, making some of these things seem like magic, and they're just not. And I'm going to tell you, oh, this is a little bit more metabolic or this is a little bit more neurological, but like at the end of the day, that stuff just like sounds way cooler than it is actually meaningful for the bottom line that is your results. Also, we have used all of the ones that I'm going to talk about today in my group program. We will continue to use them in my group program, and I have at least one of these going in every cycle somewhere for the exact purpose of, keeping it fun, giving you something new to learn and focus on as we kind of train really hard and focus on more of like that bread and butter, which we'll talk about straight sets as we go. Additionally, within our group program, which we just launched a new community app for on Mighty Networks, which I think is absolutely unbelievable. It's been so much fun. It comes free with my group program. We have a ton of extra resources. There's an amazing community of over 800 people that are always chatting, always having just good stimulating conversations. And it's been really, really nice. And in there, we have a full video and written breakdown of all of the things I'm going to go through today. So I might go through it maybe on a little bit on the quicker side. I'm not going to spend 10 minutes on each of these, but in the group program, in the community app, we have a video breakdown, an example of a set done like this, with a written description below, which is, I think, a really, really good benefit, especially because we use these a lot. So without further ado, let's start with straight sets. So straight sets are essentially what you think of when you think of just like traditional resistance training. It's like, hey, we're going to do a set of push-ups. We're going to rest for a period of time, set of push-ups, rest for a period of time, set of push-ups. And then we're going to move on to another exercise. And then we're going to do that exercise and then rest and then that exercise and rest. And you're just focusing on one exercise at a time and then resting long enough to perform really well in that set, that subsequent set, and then resting long enough and doing it again. Essentially moving from one exercise, completing all the sets of that exercise before moving on. And the notes I wrote here were just, it's your bread and butter training. It's where most training happens. And I was trying to figure out why that is the case. Like, why are straight sets where most training happens? And that's because specifically it's where beginners should start, because you should be kind of, in my opinion, focused on one thing at a time. I think the beginner doesn't necessarily have the neurological efficiency to kind of bop around between different movements or train really close to failure with some of these intensity techniques while under fatigue with good technique. And intellectually, straight sets are the easiest to kind of comprehend. And so for a lot of reasons, straight sets are just your bread and butter, where you're doing a set and then you're resting long enough to make the target muscle the limiting factor, and then you're doing it again. Most training is like this. And truthfully, in the research, I hate necessarily when people say that, but like, nothing has ever really beaten straight sets. Now, there are ways we can, I know that that's a loaded sentence, as if straight sets are always the best in all cases, all contexts. That's not necessarily true, but it's not like, you know, we have a study where we did myoreps versus straight sets and myoreps did way better, or we did cluster sets and it performed way better than straight sets. Like, straight sets are amazing. And if you never did any of these intensity techniques, I think you could build an unbelievable physique, 99.999% as good. And so straight sets are your bread and butter. It's probably where the beginner should start with just straight sets. If you're brand new to training, I'm not giving somebody myo reps right out of the gate. The point of that is because you're resting long enough here to perform really well in your sets, and you're focusing on one thing at a time, which I think has a lot of value to the beginner, but frankly, to everybody. This isn't like some beginner technique. I'm just saying that specifically one of the things that came to mind to me was like, you know, if I have somebody on their first month, maybe even first year of training, like, this is probably where I'm having them spend the majority of their time. And frankly, it's where even, you know, IFBB pro bodybuilders and everybody below them, myself, people in my group, spend the majority of their time is doing straight sets. Next, we're going to go to supersets, and I'm going to focus on the type of supersets that I would typically use. I think they're, superset just means it's kind of like the opposite, or you can counter it to a straight set, where instead of doing one exercise and then resting, and then that exercise, and then resting, and then that exercise, and basically completing all exercise, all sets of one exercise before moving on, you might do a set of push-ups, and then a set of pull-downs. And you might even do a set of push-ups, and then a set of pull-downs, and then a set of leg extensions. And so superset just means instead of doing all sets at a given of one exercise before moving on, you might have something of two exercises that are paired together. Now, a common misconception is that it can only be two exercises, right? Another common misconception is that you can't rest between these. That supersets means you go from one exercise directly to another. That isn't necessarily how you have to do it. That is one way to do it. And in the research, quite often, that's what they do. Well, they'll take somebody who does push-ups and goes right into doing cable rows or something like that with no rest in between. And what's cool is even with no rest in between, if you pick two exercises that are non-impeding, is the way I would describe them, where doing exercise A doesn't reduce your ability to do exercise B, you know, because of overlapping muscle groups or synergist muscles or cardiovascular, you know, activity, whatever, that you get very similar results. Now, if you're a rank beginner, I think that ironically, you can probably get very similar results. The more big and strong you become, the less I think that's possible, the more I think you probably benefit from resting between, because you're just so damn strong that you're able to just put so much tension in the muscle and cause yourself so much fatigue because you are so big and strong that immediately going to another exercise, unless it is something very isolated, like a bicep curl, lateral raise, probably isn't the best move. But one of those common misconceptions is that you can't rest in between. I actually don't really program any supersets without rest in between. Sometimes we do, right? Absolutely, sometimes we do. But I quite like having something like a bicep curl and then rest 60 seconds and then a tricep extension and then rest 60 seconds and then a bicep curl. And one of the benefits of doing that is, you know, I'm closing my eyes trying to kind of create a visual for you, is if you do a set of bicep curls, let's use 2 minutes of rest as a standard, what you might do for bicep curls. Straight sets would have you do bicep curls and then 2 minutes and then bicep curls, right? And so your biceps got 2 minutes of rest. Your cardiovascular system got 2 minutes of rest. Your system got 2 minutes of rest. But if you do bicep curls and then 2 minutes rest, and then let's say dumbbell skull crushers, right? Which is a tricep exercise, and then 2 minutes rest. And then you go back to bicep curls. Now your biceps have had like 5 minutes of rest. Now they might not need 5 minutes of rest, but it might be a little overkill, but it gives the local muscle the opportunity to have a greater amount of rest. Now your system, your cardiovascular system, some of the synergist muscles, whatever, they have only had 2 minutes of rest, right? You went from an exercise and then 2 minutes and then another exercise. But because it was a non-impeding muscle group, when you go back to doing biceps, it's had maybe, biceps have had maybe 5 minutes of rest. And so I quite like the idea of that. And I've experimented a lot with my training where it's, I might do leg extension, 2 minutes, bicep curl, 2 minutes, tricep extension, 2 minutes, bicep curl, and have three non-impeding exercises together. And I don't think it's game breaking in any way. Frankly, I really think it's the same at the end of the day. Maybe there's some slight benefit there if you arrange it appropriately with good exercises in the right order. But yeah, I think supersets at best, I'll level with you. At best, supersets are about saving time. And so if I would normally rest two minutes between each set, if I'm doing straight sets, and maybe I rest only a minute between supersets and I do 60-second or bicep curl, 60-second, tricep extension, 60-second, bicep curl, I might get through all of those sets a little bit quicker without sacrificing a lot in terms of stimulus and benefit. So when you do supersets, antagonist supersets, basically, antagonist just means like the muscle that does the opposite function. So a bicep and a tricep are antagonist. A hamstring and a quad are antagonist. And a lot of people talk about antagonist supersets, but in reality, the real benefit is that the muscles don't interfere or impede with each other. And so if you're going to do supersets, in my opinion, I would lean into non-impeding supersets, picking two exercises that don't interfere with one another. There are other things like short, long supersets where you train a muscle in a short position and you move to training it in a more lengthened position, which I think is fine and fun. But to me, the benefit of the superset is more from a time-saving perspective. And this doesn't, it absolutely can do that. It's just not something I lean heavily into. There's also an isolation and compound superset where you can do something like a tricep extension into a push-up, right? Tricep extension is an isolation exercise, only trains at the elbow joint, and then you have a push-up, which is a compound lift, you know, trains at the shoulder and the elbow joint. And you can do that to kind of change what that compound lift ends up biasing. But God, if you already kind of stopped listening after the last minute, like, I don't blame you. I just don't, those aren't styles of supersets that I lean into, let's say, for my target audience. I think that, yeah, I prefer utilizing supersets in a non-impeding fashion with the goal to save time. Cool. Amazing. Any other things about supersets? Yeah, logistical considerations. Supersets are less practical in gym settings unless you organize them appropriately. Like, if I program supersets in my gym group, I'm programming things that I know you can do together without being, you know, a douche with your gym etiquette. I'm never going to ever, 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 ever ask people in a gym to hold down two machines. I'm never going to ask you to hold down a machine and a bench over in the dumbbell section. Logistically, I just think that it's not worth it, right? We're not going to superset leg extension with, you know, incline barbell press, and you have to hold down two stations. Like, that's just the overstepping gym etiquette is already makes this, like, overrides the potential benefit, in my opinion. I might have you do bicep curl seated on an incline bench and then, you know, dumbbell skull crushers lying on a flat bench, right? You don't have to go anywhere. You might not even need two different sets of dumbbells. Or at a cable station, you might do, let's say you have a dual cable functional trainer. Maybe we do behind the back lateral raises supersetted with facing away cable curls, where you can use the cables. You don't even need to change them from the bottom setting potentially, and you're not getting in anybody's way logistically speaking. So if you're at home, the home group supersets work really great. You're not just not bothering anybody by holding down like or making a change or using your barbell and then using your bench or using your at-home leg extension or whatever. Like supersets at home, way more practical, just because you don't have that kind of gym etiquette consideration. The next thing we're going to talk about are myo reps. So myo reps are essentially a modification or a version of a rest pause technique where you would do one hard set. We call it a buy-in set because it's just like a normal straight set where you take I'm going to use bicep curls as an example, where you do a set of maybe 10 to 15 reps, whatever, 8 to 15 reps, don't worry about the rep range, and you take that set close to failure. And then instead of resting, instead of trying to achieve complete rest, like 2 to 4 minutes of rest, you rest something like 5 to 15 seconds. You are resting just long enough to do another few hard reps. So you're resting just long enough to do another few hard reps. And you might do that anywhere from 1 to 5 extra times on the back end of that buy-in set. So you might do a set of bicep curls, get really close to failure, and then rest for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and then do another 4 really hard reps, and then rest another 5 to 20 seconds, and then do another 3 really hard reps, another 5 to 20 seconds, and then another, again, you guys get the point. And what's happening here is you're resting just long enough so that when you go back to doing bicep curls, you are immediately getting really effective reps, right? If you do a set of 10, we all agree that the first 5 were really easy, and the last 5, maybe even the last 2 or 3, were really hard. And so those last 2 or 3 on a per rep basis were more stimulative because they are the harder reps. When you're doing myo reps, what you're doing is that first buy-in set, let's say you do a set of 10, let's say that the last 3 were really the most effective reps. Well, if you rest another 2 minutes and then you do another set of 8, you also have the last 2 or 3 reps were probably the most effective reps. But if you do a set of 10 and you get those last 2 to, you know, whatever, don't worry about these specific numbers, but the last few reps are the most powerful, the most stimulative, and then you only rest about 15 seconds, those next reps that you do are automatically going to be those hard reps again because you only rested 5 to 20 seconds. So what you're able to do in maybe a single 3-minute bout of training is you can maybe get a ton of what somebody might call effective reps or close to failure reps or failure approaches, where you might do a set of 10 where you got a few hard reps and then another 3 hard reps and then another 3 hard reps, another 2 hard reps, another 2 hard reps. And after maybe 3 or 4 minutes, you had 10 really hard reps. Now, if you want to get 10 really hard reps with straight sets, it might take you 3 sets of 10, you know, with 3-minute rest in between. It might take you 10 minutes to complete that. Now, makes myo reps sound elite. It makes it sound like, oh, I'm going to be able to get way more jacked in way less time. It turns out that on a per set basis, on a per rep basis, straight sets are better. So if you do 3 straight sets to failure, let's just say, just to equate that, 3 sets to failure, or you do 1 buy-in set plus 2 of these myo rep sets to equate 3 sets, right? 1 plus 2 versus the 3 straight sets. The 3 straight sets will cause more muscle growth. However, you could, you know, in the research, it's pretty clear if you just do a little bit more of the myo reps, you might be able to equate. So instead of maybe a 1 plus 2 of the myo rep sets, you might add a 3rd or a 4th, and you probably still do that more quickly than the 3 straight sets. Now, I love myo reps. If you've been in my program, I love myo reps. I love them because of this time-saving ability. And I love them more than something we'll talk about next, which is drop sets, because you don't have to change the weight. So if you're doing bicep curls, it's not like you need to go get a lighter weight or something like that, like you might for drop sets. You just hold on to the weight, or you put the weight down for 5, 10, 15, 20 seconds, and you go again. And yeah, myo reps are really hard, really painful. You know, a 1+5 protocol is absolutely insane, but you get a ton of stimulus in a short period of time. And God, solving for time is my number one passion in this industry. You know, optimal results are cool, but 99.999% of people that are listening to this podcast are limited by time. And so how do we maximize time? Well, some of these intensity techniques can do a really great job at that. Now, I would do myo reps only with exercises that are really stable. or isolation exercises. I would not do myo reps with a barbell back squat, with an RDL, with a split squat. It's just a technique that is going to work best if you are doing it on an exercise where you're less likely to fail for any other reason other than the target muscle. And so if you're doing back squats, your cardiovascular system is crazy taxed. Your neurological system is crazy taxed. You have a ton of synergist involvement, a ton of core engagement involvement. Your lower back and core have to work a ton. Doing back squat myo reps is almost an oxymoron. Just like, it's not going to work. You want to do these on things like leg extensions or bicep curls or lateral raises or, you know, even something like a push-up. It's not even like it can't be a compound lift, but it has to be something stable. You know, you can do these on a chest supported row, something where the target muscle is very clearly the limiter and not something else. Now we're going to move to drop sets. Drop sets are similar to myo reps, except in drop sets, you usually don't rest at all. You typically, what a drop set is you do a set, kind of like your normal buy-in set, a normal straight set. And then instead of resting at all, you extend the set by dropping the load, or technically you don't need to drop the load. We'll talk about a drop set in a second that doesn't involve dropping the load. But what you do is you do a buy-in set, and then without resting, you make something about the exercise easier so you can extend the set and continue pushing deeper into failure. Now, typically that is done by lowering the weight. Usually you're dropping by, 25 to 33%. And so if you're doing like dumbbell curls, you might do a set with 20s and then you might drop to the 15s. And so what you're doing is you're doing a set of 20, very, very close to failure. And then you drop immediately to the 15s or lighter so that you can continue doing another set immediately after. And both of these are a little bit more on the metabolic side of the spectrum. I don't really get too much in the weeds there. I think if you equate for time, then a lot of these work just as well. Like we talked about with myo reps, if you do drop sets or myo reps, you probably have to do a couple more total sets to equate for what you would get with straight sets, but you could probably do that and still be saving, you know, a significant amount of time, a couple of minutes per exercise for sure. Again, for drop sets, you want to do this on isolation and stable stuff. You don't want to do drop sets on barbell back squats, in my opinion. You want to do these on things that are highly stable or isolation lifts where the target muscle is very, very simply the limiting factor, not your cardiovascular system, not your core, not your lower back, not your neurological system, not technique breakdowns. Really, like machines, cables, isolation exercises work really great for a lot of these intensity techniques. There are some people out there who would say that drop sets are just worse myo reps. And what they would argue is that, so when you do drop sets, it's you're doing a set of 10 and then you're dropping the weight and you're usually, again, it depends on how it's programmed, but you're usually doing another full set of 10, let's say, for example. And what this person who would say they are just worse myo reps would say is that you're wasting time with a lot of these lead-in reps that aren't challenging. So with myo reps, when you get to the end of that first buy-in set, every rep you do from there on out, because you're keeping the weight heavy, is going to be really challenging. But with a drop set, when you drop the weight, you might do another 5 easy reps before you get to the hard ones again. And so a proponent of myo reps, an anti-drop set person would say, yeah, you're just wasting time doing more easy reps with this new lighter weight when you could have just kept the weight heavy, rested 10 seconds, and immediately got more close to failure reps. I see their point. I just think they're hanging their hat on a kind of like a technicality, like not something that actually ultimately matters. And I think for the sake of variation, I think drop sets can be awesome, really, really fun. But yeah, logistically, the downside if you're using dumbbells is you need to hold down a second pair of dumbbells. But if you're doing something with like a cable station or a selectorized machine where you just pull the pin out, like it's obviously incredibly easy. So I don't really care too much about that critique, let's say. Now, a different kind of drop set that doesn't involve lowering the load is called a mechanical drop set. Essentially, where you, remember, drop sets mean you do a buy-in set and then you make something about the exercise easier. That something is very typically lowering the weight, but it doesn't have to be. Something else you can do is something, changing something about the mechanics of the exercise that makes the exercise easier. And so this could be going from training more in the short position to training more in the lengthened position. You know, muscles fatigue first, they lose their ability to fully contract first, but you can work more in more lengthened positions after you fatigue there. And so you might do something like, a 90 degree preacher curl into the 45 degree preacher curl, or a dumbbell lateral raise where you're training the side delts in more of the short position into a cable lateral raise where you're working more in the lengthened position. You might do something where you're doing a standing cable curl into a facing away cable curl, or a step back tricep extension where you really challenge that short position into a stepped forward cable extension where tricep extension where you're working a little bit more in the lengthened position. These are mechanical drop sets that involve changing something about the mechanics of the exercise to make it easier to extend the set so you can work closer to failure or get another approach to failure, get more of these effective reps, essentially build more muscle while saving a little bit of time. Quick sip of water at the 25-minute mark. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more to go. The next one doesn't have a fancy name. I don't even know what to name it. I call it short rest high sets. And the idea of rest periods when it comes to training for muscle growth, there's a lot, I don't want to go too deep into it, but the standard default answer is, hey, you should rest longer. Rest longer rather than shorter so that you can perform better in each set if you are fully rested. And as a general, very general rule of thumb, I like that. I'd rather people in general rest longer rather than shorter so that they're more recovered so that each set gets their best effort. I want those sets to be high quality. However, we see in the research that that doesn't always need to be the case. You don't need to rest. I guess I'm going to go on a small tangent. Studies look at, like, if you're going to do 4 sets of bicep curls with 3 minutes rest versus 4 sets of bicep curls with 1 minute rest, and then the set with 3 minute rest does better. And people are like, see, you should rest longer. But the group that did 60-second rest, it only took them 5 minutes to complete 4 sets. The group that did 3 minute rest took them 15 minutes. So what if the group that did 1 minute rest, what if they just did another couple sets? They're like, hey, like, you know, okay, like, I get it. If I rest longer on a per set basis, I'm getting more stimulus. But what if I just do another couple sets? What if I equate for time? What if you do 3 sets of bicep curls with 3 minutes rest, and that's 10 minutes? What if I do 5 sets of bicep curls with 1 minute rest, and that takes me 10 minutes? Which group then gets better results? The truth is, it turns out that that doesn't really matter now, that it doesn't matter as much. Now, I would say that that doesn't work for every exercise. Again, a lot of these intensity techniques are better done with isolation lifts, machines, stable exercises. I would never do 5 sets of back squats with a 10-minute rest because of the cardiovascular demand, the neurological demand, the technique, the proclivity for, the chance that you have a technique breakdown. I would not do this on complicated techniques, exercises that involve a lot of like neurological efficiency, cardiovascular fatigue. I would not do that. But again, using a bicep curl as our like prototypical isolation lift, yeah, I think there's an argument for the fact that because a bicep curl is not cardiovascularly demanding, doesn't really have a lot of synergist muscle activation and fatigue, that the group that does 5 sets with 60-second rest, it might take, so if you imagine each set takes, 30 seconds, and you're resting 1 minute. So this is 7.5 minutes to complete 5 sets, right? 5 minutes plus 5 sets split in half for 30 seconds each. We have 7.5 minutes. Well, if I do 3 minutes of rest, I can probably only do maybe 2 sets or 3 sets, right? 3 minutes of rest, and I want to do that 7.5 minutes. I want to equate for time. Well, I'm only probably getting 3 sets in. Yeah, I'm getting 3 sets in. 1 set, then 3 minute rest, 1 set, 3 minute rest, and then a 3rd set. Well, 5 sets with 60-second rest or 3 sets with 3 minutes of rest, it's tough to say one of those is going to perform better. In fact, in the research, we see when we equate for time, it doesn't really matter much. So because it doesn't really matter much, this utilization of more sets with less rest is absolutely a viable strategy for certain exercises. And frankly, I quite like it for a lot of exercises where if I'm doing bicep curls, I really feel kind of ready to go again after, a minute or two. I don't necessarily need 3 or 4 minutes. Now, there is no always and inherently better, but there are trade-offs here. There are, again, variation for variation's sake. I have loved utilizing short rest high sets for certain exercises that don't really require a lot of technique, that are very stable, isolation lifts, not cardiovascularly fatiguing. I know you've heard me say that a lot, but that's where a lot of these things shine. And even if you're not going to equate for sets, I think you can lean into the fact that bicep curls probably don't need as much rest as back squats. And I think a lot of people are like, no, you got to do 3 to 5 minutes of rest for everything because this, you know, one study did that didn't equate for time, whatever. I don't think you need as much rest on bicep curls as you do for back squats. And I think generally your training should reflect that. Now, that doesn't mean we don't ever program 3 or 4 minutes rest between bicep curls. We do. Right now, as listening to this podcast, we're probably in one of our strength, are more of like strength hypertrophy cycles. And we're going to get into two of our strategies for that in a second, where we will lean into even longer rest for absolute maximum recovery for maximum performance. This isn't that, but I think it plays on this balance of lower rest, more sets. And for some exercises, the sweet spot to maximize stimulus might be on this shorter rest, more sets side of the spectrum. And even if it's not a net greater stimulus when you equate for time, I bet you it's a net neutral and a tool in the toolbox, you could say, as a really viable strategy to change up your kind of straight set mentality. So the next two things we're going to go through are things that you would use when you're doing a bit more of a strength hypertrophy blend. When you're doing hypertrophy training, but you're on a little bit more of the strength side of the spectrum. And when I say that, when I say on the strength side of the spectrum, things like resting longer and lifting heavier weights for less reps, doing that, but within the kind of boundaries of hypertrophy training, not powerlifting. This is not about doing heavy singles, but on the more hypertrophy and on the more strength end of the hypertrophy spectrum. And so the first one is called cluster sets. Cluster sets are essentially where you would do, let's say, a set of four. We'll use something like lateral raises. A set of four, and then rest 15 seconds, and then set of four, and then rest 15 seconds, and then set of four. And so you did three clusters of four, and those three clusters would be one set. Then you would rest, again, full rest, 2 to 4 minutes, whatever, and then you would do another set that involves three of these clusters. And I use lateral raises because I love doing cluster sets of lateral raises, because cluster sets give you an opportunity to use heavier weight than you typically use. Now, doing three clusters of four is 12 total reps. If I tell you to go do a set of 12 with lateral raises, you may use the 10-pound dumbbells. If we're doing cluster sets and we're doing three sets of four, right, three clusters of four with a 15-second break in between, you might be able to go to the 12 and a halves. You might even be able to go to the 15s. And from a hypertrophy perspective, I don't really think this is such a big deal. From a fun perspective, I think it absolutely is. You know, for exercises where you've been stuck on a certain weight, or you feel like you really just want to use a little bit heavier load, or at least expose your body to that heavier load, get used to using it, I think cluster sets can be incredible. I think cluster sets can be incredible for things like chin-ups and push-ups, for like bodyweight exercises that people, you know, listen, doing a set of five chin-ups is like incredibly challenging. But if you can do one or two chin-ups, you might be able to do five chin-ups in a cluster fashion. You might be able to do a set of two and then rest 20 seconds, and then a set of two and then rest 20 seconds, and then a set of one and then rest 3 minutes. And a cluster set might be able to, might give you a chance to do the thing you can only do a couple of, but aggregate enough total volume over the course of several sets that it's better for hypertrophy. Right, you would never do a set of one chin-up for hypertrophy, but you might do three or four sets of one in a cluster, and then two or three sets of those clusters to aggregate enough volume for hypertrophy. And so I love cluster sets for that reason. I love cluster sets for things like lateral raises or bicep curls or skull crushers, or whatever, where going up in weight can be such a big challenge because of the percent increases that are available to you. You know, going from 10 pounds to 15 pounds is a 50% increase, right? Going from 10 to 12 and a half is a 25% increase, but cluster sets might let you go grab that heavier dumbbell that you've, you know, kind of wanted to use, and just exposing the muscles and yourself to that heavier weight. None of what I just said means it's going to be game breaking for strength or hypertrophy, but as a part of a programming that is enjoyable and fun and changes it up and has some variation, I think it can be amazing. Really, really big fan of cluster sets. Love it for stuff like push-ups and pull-ups. Again, if you can do one chin-up, doing a set of one chin-up isn't really great for hypertrophy, but you might want to get better at chin-ups. And so you might say, well, I want to get better at chin-ups, but I also care about hypertrophy. So you might say, all right, I'm going to do three sets of one, or three clusters of one, one chin-up, 20 seconds, one chin-up, 20 seconds, One chin-up, rest 2 minutes. And you might repeat that 3 times, in which case you did 9 chin-ups, which is, you know, again, closer to an amount of volume that might be more relevant for hypertrophy. The next thing we're going to talk about are, it's called DRAL, DRAL, or DRAL, nobody calls it that, or pyramid sets. And pyramid sets is what I will be calling it going forward, just because I think that that's a nomenclature that people are more familiar with. But DRAL is an acronym that stands for descending rep, ascending load, which just means with every set, you are going down in reps and up in weight. With every set, you go down in reps, up in weight. And that is also known as a pyramid set where you're, pyramids, it's kind of, listen, pyramid, reverse pyramid, depending on who you ask, are executed in different ways. Sometimes with pyramid sets, people think you need to go down in reps, up in weight, and then also back down in weight, up in reps after that to create actually like visually a pyramid where you went up in weight, then down in weight. I don't really get too fussed about that. I don't really see the need to kind of go down in weight afterwards. You could do that, by the way. I think, again, from the sake of like everything can work, I think that that's fine too. But when I say pyramid work, what I mean is you're doing something like 3 sets of leg presses. The first set is a set of 12 reps. The second set is a set of 10 reps, and the third set is a set of 8 reps. Or back squats. First set is a set of 8, second set a set of 6, third set, 4 reps. And what you're doing is, with each subsequent set, you are adding a little bit of load and shooting for less reps. And kind of why you are doing this is because with each set, every time you do a set of an exercise, you gain a little bit of what I would call, or what is called, neurological efficiency, which is like, you know, taking a couple golf practice swings. The point of doing that is to get in the rhythm of doing the swing so that when you ultimately go up to drive the ball, you are your most powerful, right? When you do warm-up sets, you are actually doing some of this potentiating of the nervous system. When we talk about warming up for hypertrophy, what do we talk about? We talk about doing lighter sets and working up to your heavier weight so that when you grab your working weight, it is something that your body has been primed for with those warm-up sets. It's similar here. If you do a set of 10 reps back squat with 100 pounds, then you go to a set of 115 for 8 and then a set of 130 for 6, you are getting better at doing the back squat as you go. And so you are priming yourself for that kind of final set of really heavy weight for less reps. Instead of just jumping into a heavy set of 4, doing a set of 10, then or a set of 8, then a set of 6, and then ultimately landing and on that final set of 4 gives you a good opportunity to show up to that set of 4 with your best opportunity to crush it. Now, again, do I think this is such a game-breaking strategy? Absolutely not. We are doing clusters and pyramid sets in our program right now, and what is happening is a lot of people are PRing. There's a lot of personal records being broken. That's because pyramid sets kind of prime you for that final top set of really heavy weight for less reps. And that's awesome. From a blend of strength and hypertrophy, we're getting an opportunity to focus on moving really heavy weight for less reps, but we're also making sure that we're accruing enough volume over the course of the sets that it is still within the bounds of what's best for hypertrophy. Anything else? No, cool. Those are pyramid sets. Next, we have four more, and 3 of them involve partial reps, and so if you were hoping for some partial rep discussion, it's coming in just a moment. The next one we're going to go through is called giant sets. Actually, I have this as my definition for giant sets. I looked up what other people think giant sets are, and there's like 3 or 4 different things that people call giant sets, so, you know, don't necessarily need to quote me on this. You might go to another program and they call giant sets. One of the common things that people see as giant sets are when you do a superset with like 5 different exercises, people call it a giant set, which I think is totally valid. Where I kind of learned and was introduced first to giant sets is essentially this idea that's like, okay, you're going to do, you know, 20 reps of lateral raises, but you're going to do that with your 8 rep max. So you're going to pick a weight that you can do about 8 lateral raises with, and you're going to do lateral raises with as little rest as you need until you can accrue 20 total reps. You might do a set of 8 and then rest 30 seconds and then a set of 4, that's 12 reps, and then rest a little bit and then do a set of 5 and then, you know, you're at 17 reps and then a set of 3 and bam, you got 20 reps. Next week, you might see 25 reps in your program or 30 reps or, you know, maybe it goes up a little bit slower. But it's basically you have a set rep target you need to hit. and you're going to use a weight that you can't obviously do that all in one set, and you're going to just do sets until you get to that number. I really like giant sets because it takes out, it gives you the chance to kind of auto-regulate, which just means like self-modulate the rest periods where you might say, hey, you know, we've done giant sets for lateral raises. We've done giant sets for leg extensions where it's like, hey, you're going to do 20 reps of your leg extensions with a weight. You can only do 8 reps. So you might do a set of 8 and then a set of 4 and then a set of 3 instead of 2. And you're going to do that until you get to 20. And it's just, it's a nice change in intent psychologically. I've seen this be really, really fun where you forget about, it just gives you something else to think about. You are adding reps, aggregating towards a specific number, which is, again, it's kind of vague and abstract. It's not necessarily what matters for muscle growth so much, but it is absolutely something slightly different to think about. And having that slightly different mentality going into your sets can be really, really fun. Giant sets are really, really fun. Giant sets are really freaking hard. So when it comes to like building muscle and getting a good stimulus, you absolutely will, especially if your coach says the first set needs to go to failure, which I quite like, or a rep in the tank, something like that. I think it can be, man, doing 20 reps of lateral raises with your 8 rep max is going to be an absolutely diabolical stimulus. Super duper fun. The next three are integrated partials, which we'll talk about. Obviously, we're going to talk about all of these. Reverse drop sets and forced progression. And everybody coming here, if you've nerded out a little bit about hypertrophy lately, you know that this all this length of position, partial rep stuff, it's all the rage right now. Right now, as of recording, these are my three favorite ways to incorporate partial reps into training. The first is just having straight up partial reps. And I didn't even write that one down, but I just want to touch on it, is purposeful partials is what we'll call it, where you only do partial reps. And we might do something like this with a dumbbell lateral raise, where we're only doing the bottom half of the range of motion. And usually we're doing this for people who don't have cables. And so we're usually using only partials because that's the best solution for getting a great stimulus in the length and position on an exercise where it's really hard to do that. So maybe that's on something like a dumbbell row or a lat pull down on the cables. For a lot of back exercises, it's tough to get a really great length and stimulus. You might only do partial reps just to make sure that that length and position, that stretch position of the muscle is getting a really good stimulus. The next one is integrated partials. Now, you might have heard this, and I've said it before, 1.5 reps or 1.25 reps. It's the same shit. Integrated partials means you're integrating partial reps into your set, like a 1.5 rep or a quarter rep. And that looks like, you know, let's say you're doing this on a leg press. You would go all the way down in the leg press and you would press halfway up. Then you'd go all the way back down and you'd press all the way up. All the way down, press halfway up, then go all the way down, press all the way up. If you were doing something like this on something like a chest-supported row, you'd pull all the way in, then let it go all the way out, then pull halfway in, and then let it go all the way out. Then pull all the way in and all the way out, halfway in and all the way out. And what you're doing is you are, on the net balance of the total work you do in that set, for every single rep you did, right? For the leg press, if going down all the way, halfway up, down all the way, and all the way up, if that is one rep, which is how I would typically suggest you track it, that one rep had two approaches into the length and position, right? It had two lengthened exposures. You went all the way down twice for every single rep. And so that's kind of what the point of these integrated partials are in most cases, is to get a greater amount of what we would call lengthened exposures, exposing the muscle to the lengthened position. So I'm just going to repeat that. If you do a leg press and you go all the way down, that's the lengthened position for the glutes, the adductors, the quads, whatever. And then you push halfway up. So you got one lengthened rep there, right? Because you only did the lengthened half. And then you go all the way down again, and then you do a full rep. That full rep also had an exposure to the lengthened position. So you had two lengthened exposures for a single rep. That can create, for certain exercises, a greater amount of net lengthened exposures in a single set. Now, this is best done with exercises that have some sort of a full stacked rest. Now, what I mean is, think about the leg press. At the top of the leg press, when your knees lock out, which they should, and it's totally safe to do that, your joints are stacked, your ankle joint, Like the weight is pushing down on your joints now, not your muscles, which by the way, that sounds scary. It's not scary. Essentially at the top of a leg press, you are resting, right? You're resting at the top of a leg press. Your knees are locked. Your ankles stacked on top of your knees, stacked on top of your hip. The weight is resting there. And these integrated partials, I'll give you another example, is a dumbbell press. If you do a dumbbell press, you go all the way down, press halfway up, all the way down, and press all the way up. And if you press all the way up and to the point where your elbow locks out and your arm is kind of perpendicular to the floor, that is a stacked joint position where the weight is resting. And you don't really have to expend much weight. Another example is an RDL, right? What is the top of the RDL? You're just freaking standing there. It's a rest. So you would go down all the way in your RDL, maybe come halfway up, go all the way down. And when you come all the way up, you have the opportunity to rest. Same for something like a hack squat. And so these integrated partials, in my opinion, are best done on exercises where you have a little bit of a break. Because if you kept going with kind of more of a continuous constant tension, we did a great experiment back in N1 at the most recent hypertrophy camp where we tested some of this stuff. If you do these 1.5 reps on exercises that don't have this break, you end up burning out really quickly. But if you do it on an exercise that has that sort of micro break built in, you end up getting a, you know, noticeably more lengthened exposures, which is where the benefit is. Now, reverse drop sets. So a reverse drop set, remember if we talk, you know, we talked about drop sets. Drop sets are where you do a set and then you make something about the exercise easier. In most cases, you lower the weight so that you can keep going. Reverse drop set, appropriately named, means you do a single set and then you actually make the weight heavier. So how does that work? Now, I'm going to talk about doing this for a lot of back exercises because back exercises are incredibly challenging to, it's challenging to bias the length and position in back exercises. The resistance profile for most back exercises is linear, meaning the weight doesn't get any heavier. Yeah, we don't need to go too deep into the physics and the biomechanics here, but for back exercises, it's really difficult to challenge the length and position. It is really difficult to make the stretched position of the back exercise the limiting factor. If you're doing a dumbbell row, as you get closer to failure, what you're going to be able to what you're not going to be able to do is pull that weight all the way up towards you. And so that's the thing that you will fail first in that short contracted position at the top first. And if you end the set there, right, you could have missed out on being able to do a lot more reps, but in the more stretched position. So when you're doing reverse drop sets, I'm going to talk about it with a chest-supported row example because I think chest-supported back movements are mostly where I would use reverse drop sets, almost entirely. I mean, you could find plenty of other places to use it, but I think doing chest-supported back exercises, machines, cables, dumbbells is where reverse drop sets shine the most. You do a set close to failure. So let's say you do 10 reps close to failure, and you stop the set when you, let's say, can't pull your elbows all the way back behind your body, when you fail in the short position. Then you drop the weight. Again, you don't necessarily need to go all the way to failure, but close to failure. And then you drop the weight and you make it heavier. Maybe you add 10, 20% weight. And immediately you pull as hard as you can. But because you are tired and you just made it heavier, despite your best efforts, you won't be able to pull it all the way down. You won't be able to pull it. You'll only be able to pull it maybe for the first 20%, 25%, 33%, 50%, right? So if you're imagining a chest-supported row, you're going to take it to the point where your elbow doesn't pass behind your body anymore. Then you're going to add maybe 10 or 20% weight because you're tired and the weight is now heavier. You, despite pulling with maximal intent, can only pull maybe halfway in. And so that first half of the movement is the length and position. And so this is a really great way. And you might take that to the point where you can only, you know, when is the end of a reverse drop set? It's up to your coach. I like to say when you can't pull beyond the first quarter of the rep, when you are pulling with your 100% intent and you can't even pull it a quarter of the way in, that's the end of that set. Now, again, that's my definition for it. You might have a coach that prescribes it, you know, take it to the end where you can't move at all. And again, what's the point of doing this is that set that you just did where you failed in the short position, then made it heavier, then failed in the lengthened position, the net of that set will be biased towards the lengthened position. Normally, back exercises are short position overloaded. They're just, you're going to fail first in the short position. And so doing a reverse drop set allows you to get more tension in the lengthened position per set. That's what we're doing it for. And last is forced progression, which I absolutely love for chest-supported rows. And it's similar to reverse drop sets, but not necessarily the same. And the reason I love forced progression the most is because it's really simple. It's really easy to communicate to you. Forced progression means no matter what, every single week you will progress. And when I say progress, I mean do an extra rep or maybe a little extra load, even if it means doing partial reps. So let's say you're doing, I have programmed 8 to 12 reps of chest supported row. Week 1, you did 8 reps. Week 2, you're going to do 9 reps. Week 3, you're going to do 10 reps. Week 4, you're going to do 11 reps. You might say, Jordan, what if I can't do 10 reps? No, you will do 10 reps, even if that 10th rep is a partial rep. So if you imagine doing chest supported rows or lat pull downs, and you can only do 8 full reps, right? Let's use a lat pull down, and let's say, hey, you know, you're trying to touch the bar to your chest every rep for a lat pull down. You can, in week 1, I would say stop when you can no longer touch the bar to your chest. That is the end of the set. So you do your 8th rep, you pull it all the way down, it touches the chest, and then you know you know that's your last rep. Next week, you're going to do 9, even if that 9th rep only gets below the chin. And then next week, you're going to do 10 reps, even if that 10th rep only gets below the nose. The next week, you're going to do 11, even if that rep only gets to the forehead. And the point of doing this is because what we're doing is we're adding volume over time in a more lengthened position, right? As you're unable to pull all the way down, that signifies you're working in a bit more of a lengthened position. I love doing this because it's really clear cut. You did 8 last week, you're doing 9 this week. You did 9 last week, you're doing 10 this week. And it throws the what should I do this week just out the window. You are adding a rep no matter what, no matter what happens to the range of motion. What we are doing across the cycle is aggregating, gaining, adding more of these slightly more lengthened reps over the course of time, which is frankly really enjoyable. I love sitting down for my chest supported rows and just looking at how many reps I did and saying, you're going to do another one. Even if that another one is only a 50% rep in the lengthened position, that's fine. I want that extra lengthened position work. And so I'd say, you know, reverse drop sets might be slightly better at this ability to bias the length and position, but I love forced progression because they are much cleaner. It's much simpler to explain. It's less, you know, intellectually kind of complicated. And for that reason, because I don't think the difference in stimulus is all that much, we do a lot of forced progression. And frankly, we do a lot of forced progression on chest supported pulling movements or lat pull downs, you know, for back exercises. I think basically every other muscle group, let me think for a second. Basically every other muscle group has the ability to be challenged in the lengthened position more easily than all of your back muscles. And so for that reason, again, unless you have like fancy prime equipment, or you know, you're doing step back hammer rows on the hammer strength machine, it's really tough to bias the lengthened position for back movements. And so for back movements, we do quite a bit of integrated partials and reverse drop sets and force progression. So those are my favorite. Maybe there were one or two that I missed. I'm sure I'll think of something later. I was like, oh yeah, I like that. But straight sets are your bread and butter. Antagonist or non-impeding supersets, really great for saving time. Myo reps, great for saving time, changing it up. Drop sets and mechanical drop sets, also amazing for saving time. I'm not going to go through all of them, but yeah, I think this was a good opportunity to kind of expose you guys, get you thinking about, you know, some of the ways that we can make training more fun. I think as I'm talking about all these, I get really excited because I really like using a lot of these strategies, but not because I don't think people who come to my program are like, oh my God, we did cluster sets. I got way more jacked. No, hell no. I think over time, the training is more fun. It's more varied and it's varied with no downside and it's varied in a way that's not mega complicated. Even if you thought some of what we talked about today was complicated, or maybe you had trouble visualizing or understanding some of the reasons why we're doing that stuff, I explain it ad nauseum in the group. In the group, I go into much greater detail with examples and demonstrations so that you know how to do them. I don't want this to be a deterrent for people. Oh, I'm never going to understand what he just said. You absolutely will. I spend way more, not that I'm trying to, not that we're glossing over them in this podcast, but in the group, I have a specific video breakdown demonstration for each of these that really brings kind of what we talked about today to life. And so thanks for listening, guys. If you have a question, don't hesitate to reach out, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.